The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Welcome in to another episode of Punt and the Poor Man. We're still on that name, Ryan. Punt and the Poor Man. I think it's the right name. Hard R. P-O-O-R. Punt and the Poor Man. Drew Butler and Ryan Skates with another awesome interview for everybody to enjoy today. And our guest, Ryan, is none other than the one, the only, Jeff Dantzler. He is the voice of Athens, as you said, a longtime Georgia broadcasting personality. He's a Georgia historian. Some may call him a savant. He's just a blast to talk to.
Yeah, outside of, you know, number one will always be Larry Munson, at least for us.
Yeah.
And then Lauren Smith. I mean, his voice is Georgia. It's distinctive. It takes you right to Athens. I mean, I have so many memories of hearing him on the post-game shows. And, I mean, he's just always there. And there's so much to be said for just showing up and being somewhere. And he is that guy right now. Everybody talks about how Dan McGill was that guy, and then Lauren Smith was, and now it's JD. He would never say that about himself, but he is that guy now, and how cool to catch up with him.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's a reason why we wanted to interview Lauren, why we're interviewing Jeff. These are the guys who people resonate with when you're talking about Georgia football or Georgia athletics. Jeff is the voice of Georgia baseball. He's the voice of Lady Dogs Hoops, and he does it all, pre- and post-game on your Georgia football Saturdays, Bulldog Brunch with some guy named Kevin Butler as well. I have been gracious or grateful to know Jeff for a number of years, and when we sat here and talked with him, his passion for Georgia, it's unmatched. It really is. It's fun to witness and get him riled up because the man simply loves anything and everything Georgia.
He does. I mean, he carries the banner for people like me who kind of weave in and out of, you know, how passionate or connected I might feel, but his love for Georgia is unwavering and almost disturbing.
We talk about it during the interview, and I have seen Jeff during a football game. It is a sight to be seen. He will make anybody around him anxious. Years ago, it was the game where Rodrigo Blankenship kicked the game-winning field goal against Kentucky. I think my dad was traveling with the team. So the post-game show, they needed a fill-in. Jeff called me. He's like, hey, can you do the post-game show with me? We're going to hit the, you know, it was like an 8 p.m. kick. We're hitting the air like 11. I was like, whatever, I'll do it. So I watched the game with Jeff at Alan Miller's house, and it was a Kentucky game, and it went down to the last second. I mean, Jeff Dantzler was just a ball of anxiety for 2.5 hours, and then Georgia wins, and the world is spinning still. It's amazing. You have to witness it. He just goes to show how much he loves Georgia.
Well, and I imagine at that point in the season, probably the game, of course, I should remember this game, but it probably wasn't like a national championship.
No, it was an SEC Network late night game. Rodrigo made the kick, and he did the post-game press conference with his chin strap fully buckled up and his helmet on. His glasses were still on.
This is probably 18.
2016, I think.
16.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so 16 was a throwaway year.
Yes. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
He's still just sick over it.
Yeah. Oh, and we touched on his relationship with Coach Dan McGill. We touched on what the university means to him, how Athens is probably the most special place in the world to him. And all in all, it was just a laugh. It was a great conversation to have with JD.
Awesome stuff.
Absolutely. Here he is, the one, the only, Jeff Dantzler on Punt and the Poor Man. Welcome in, Punt and the Poor Man. Drew Butler here alongside my co-host Ryan Skates from the Poor Man's Game Notes. And we have a very, very, very special guest on today's episode. It is none other than the voice of Georgia baseball and the voice of Georgia women's basketball, host of Dog Talk pre- and post-game on Georgia football weekends, along with the Bulldog Brunch live from the Hilltop Grill in Athens, Georgia. He is an Athens and Georgia radio broadcasting and personality and a Georgia historian. Might be able to call him a savant. It's Jeff Dantzler.
He's a legend. The voice of Athens.
Yes.
No voice takes you to Athens faster, and I'm just going to keep him off the air as long as I can by extending the
introduction.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, how are you, brother? Thanks so much for joining us.
It's an honor to have you guys together. I think it's a perfect marriage. You two are great guys and great Bulldogs, obviously. And it's always exciting. And what a time to be alive, back-to-back national championships. And I can remember just growing up, and I was 8 in 1980, and we came so close those next 2 years. And I know for so many of us, I thought and I believed. I remember Drew being on with your dad many times when we were going through some hard times, Daddy, like losing at Colorado. Some hard times, man. Dare to be great.
Yeah.
Dare to be great. We can do this. And when I think about back-to-back national titles, you know, you go back, let's say, the last 50 years since the early 70s, who are the schools that have done that? Nebraska, Oklahoma, Southern Cal, Alabama.
Florida.
We beat them in 07.
Back-to-back.
Back-to-back.
Yes,
back-to-back.
Yes,
back. Yes. So it's like those type programs, USC, Alabama, Oklahoma, Nebraska, that can be us. We can be that great. You know, it starts with getting the guys in our state. We've got the resources. We've got the passion. We've got the fan base. And now we've got the coach. We've got our guy. And this is just incredible what this program's been able to do. It's the dream come true.
It really is. You're a professional broadcaster, because it leads into the first question I have written down. As a longtime broadcaster on the Georgia Bulldogs radio network, you heavily interact with the fans more so than other people who are on the network. You'd have to say these last few years have been pretty enjoyable.
Oh, they certainly have been. The hardest part of this job with Kevin and yours truly, it's when we lose. And for me, at the root of it, I am a diehard, psychotic Georgia football fan. So when we lose, I'm hurting as bad as anybody is. And it's very, very difficult. So you definitely have to enjoy the wins. And I think, now, Drew, you're a great athlete. You probably got this, that, you know, great competitors hate to lose more than they love to win. But I think everybody, whether you're an athlete, a coach, a fan, whatever it may be, you have to enjoy the victories and enjoy the ride. And I know from just my fans' point of view, I started a few years ago saying, like, okay, when we win, I'm enjoying this through Monday night football before I start stressing about the next Saturday. Now, I know Kirby, there a couple times, like over the last few years, I remember like one day at marker 7, I ran into Jeb Blazevich in there, and I said, hey, great win last night. I think we had beaten Fly. Hey, you know, we're already on to Missouri or whoever was coming up next. And I get it, but as a fan, you certainly have to enjoy it. You know, Coach Dooley used to always say, the highs are never as high as the lows are low. So when you do have those high times, you better soak them in, and couldn't be any better right now.
Gosh, there's nothing to add to that.
I know.
All right, that was great. See you later, Jeff. It is crazy. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I wish we could slow it down. Last year, I remember – you know, I felt like, as we all did, and Jeff put it great last year, no win had ever meant so much to any group of people as that win over Alabama meant to us.
Yeah.
And
especially to Drew.
Yes, that's a fact. With my Bama wife.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and then this year, I didn't want the season to start. I would have been completely happy if Georgia never played another football game ever again. And then we go out and we win every one of them.
Yeah.
And now we don't even know it's different. Liam here from Australia has never seen Georgia lose a game in person since he's been on
You're
this side
leaving.
Of the dateline.
Yeah.
They haven't lost.
You're not leaving it. And you're exactly right. I remember in the spring last year, people said, are you ready for the season? I'm like, no, because I can tell you, working with so many other sports, making those victory rides into Baton Rouge and Tuscaloosa and Gainesville with that national championship for basketball, for baseball, tennis, whatever it may be, really, really sweet for all of our teams. And I'd always said, I made a pact with myself that if we ever won it all, I said, I'm not going to get nervous that next year until the Tech week. I'm just going to enjoy it. Well, you know, once the first bad play goes wrong. But this was the
about
most
this past year for Georgia Tech.
That was the
that
most
was a high school team.
That was the most enjoyable season of my life.
Yeah.
And I think back talking about Liam only knowing the wins. Again, I was 8 in 1980, so you really don't know any different. And if I go back and watch some old film, if I'm on the elliptical, I prefer looking at 81 and 82 because we've already got that title. So for this year, this was my most enjoyable season because, you know, you think even if it doesn't happen, we won it last year. And, I mean, there was – even when it looked bleak against Ohio State, and we were 5 feet under – there was still that thought of, you know what? We won it all last year. We won the SEC championship. Yeah. We're in
start
the playoff.
Yeah, it's
hey, I sent out the condolences to you. Were probably on one of the threads. Like, listen, this has been an incredible run, been an amazing year. It's just hard. And then lo and behold,
preemptively putting out the text threads.
We pulled the thing out. It's like I'd said to somebody. I mean, you guys weren't alive then. CJ Stroud's so great. I go, this time we beat Marino.
Yeah.
Because that's who beat us the year after, and we were number two going into that game. And you know, had we won and Clemson lost, we would have won back-to-back. But said, this time we beat Marino, and Stroud had that kind of game. He looks like
– he did have a great game.
God does. He looks like that kind of player. So, again, for me, most enjoyable ever, and we've had a lot of discussions about, well, what was your favorite win? You know, was it Oklahoma? Was it the Alabama game? Hell no, TCU. We won 65-7. It's a no-brainer. Like my two favorite wins when I was a kid, we beat Tech 44-7 and 81 and Florida 44-0 and 82. I'm like, 65-7, like stress-free.
Yeah. No doubt.
That's number one in my book.
You know, you're talking about that Ohio State game, and you as a Georgia savant, but also just being a big-time fan. That's the game Georgia used to always lose.
I don't think we win that game had we not beaten Alabama the year before.
I agree with that.
It got the monkey off the back, the literal and figurative elephant off the chest.
Yeah.
But this team, we believed, and that is one for a game of that magnitude. I think that's the first time in my life, and I'm growing up with Coach Dooley in the mighty months and a natural-born pessimist. You know, oh, God, we're down 3-0. We're going to lose it. But deep down, you know, you're still thinking, we can still do this. That's the first time I can remember, especially in a game like that, thinking like, we are going to lose, and we won.
Yeah.
I mean, that we are downright going to lose this game. And we pulled the thing out. And there's no doubt about this. We have played in the two greatest semifinal games of all time.
Absolutely. There's no question. There's no question. You mentioned the Coach Dooley quote of, don't let the highs get too high or the lows get too low. Bruce Arians, who was the head coach when I was with the Arizona Cardinals, coached with Bear Bryant for a while. And
right.
Something that he always used to repeat was, you can learn a lot from losing, but you can learn even more from almost losing.
Right.
And Georgia did that by almost losing to Ohio State. They made the corrections, and they thumped TCU. You almost had that feeling because they played what was essentially, when it was all said and done, the real national championship against Ohio State.
I would agree with that 100%, and I can remember walking out of that stadium that night where there's been a lot of heartbreak through the years.
Oh, I mean,
going back to 1-8-1-8.
I don't go there.
Yeah, it's awful. But I remember when we beat Oregon, I remember thinking, you know, it's possible we could be here three times. And I thought that Oregon game, for many reasons, it was so big because we needed to get good mojo going in that building again. Mm-hmm. And we did. But coming out of there, I mean, one of the first things, your dad and I were walking to the car, and I just said, you know, we gotta find a way to get Bowers more involved. He's the best player in the country. And your dad said, they need to come up with some new plays mm-hmm. for Bowers. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you talk about Kirby and that staff getting to work. And with TCU, not getting cute. It's Bowers. It's McConkey. It's McIntosh. Getting the ball to your guys, and Georgia did just that. And so that was one of the things that stood out to me, was in that time in between the games, because when the chips are down, especially in football, you know, in baseball, we know the guy's stats and all that, but it's about your great players make the big plays in the biggest of stages.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it was like, here's Stetson getting the ball to Bowers, getting the ball to Bennett. That really set the tone for us. I thought the staff did just a great job of getting everybody ready. And it was also a perfect scenario. We're coming off, your Coach Arians quote is spot on there, the near miss in this amazing game. And TCU, they probably feel like they steal one. Mm-hmm. Michigan left, what, 24 points on the table? And I'm sure it was a spot where they were just happy to be there. I can tell you, there was once, I've got to go to four College World Series with the Bulldogs, there was one year we were just happy to be there.
Yeah.
And right. You know, that's natural for that to happen when you don't expect it. There were some other years where we expected to be there, and we nearly won the whole thing. But I think it was really a perfect storm, and that was a great team that played a great game against a really, really good team that had a bad night, because it was – we had obviously grabbed control. Then once the turnover started coming, it snowballed quickly.
You weren't there, right?
No, I did not go.
Did you have any idea – because I was at home watching that game – that the kick literally happened, the foot-to-leather contact happened in 2022 and the ball landed in 2023. Did you have that sense of timing when it all went down?
No, it was about probably 10, 15 minutes later.
Okay.
You know, because all we're thinking about there is...
This is it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a... Strangely, in dome stadiums in Atlanta where there's been all that heartbreak, we've got a history of blocking kicks.
Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
there, and that was a long kick. And I, by no means, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to miss it for sure. And I'll tell you right now, I was taking a knee, saying a prayer in the press box.
I don't doubt that one bit.
And
which is illegal in the press box.
Yeah, that's, I guess I've been banned
no
again.
Praying, no cheering.
No, yes. No praying. No praying. And he, you know, obviously he hooked it so badly. But you have to give us a lot of credit for that. You know, we get a push there. Yeah. You know, Darius Smith's back there. But by no means was it a gimme. And I think the fact, too, that it was a 50-yarder, and he was automatic from inside of that. And yeah. that was kind of his threshold. But for that to happen, yeah, right at the stroke of midnight.
It's unbelievable.
You could have tried that. You know, I'm sure you guys both golf, and, you know, it'd be one of those, like, let's say you hit one off the toe and it hits a tree and rolls on the green and goes in for a hole in one. You could stand there with buckets of balls for a month yeah. and try to do that, no chance. To try and, like, if you would have tried to script that and have it happen, it would have been impossible.
No doubt.
Right.
But it really was amazing. And then, of course, there's still 3 seconds and we're running on the field. I'm like, can we just get the snap now? Can we just get out of here? Can we just get out of here? But that was an epic night.
No question.
Yeah. I mean, what do you add? Yeah, I have nothing to add to any of this.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
And then we got back. We were staying at the Ritz, and
okay.
I think my head hit
Big
the pillow.
Spender.
Yeah. You had about 3:48, and my wife the next morning goes, oh, by the way, I put some champagne on the room. And I go, ugh. I go, how much was it? She goes, well, how much is too much? I go, triple digits. She goes, oh, way over that. I'm like, yeah, New Year's Eve champagne at the Ritz. I think it was about $160. So I know on my hotel bill.
Expense report.
Yeah, well, I just always turn in what the Amex, and let's say the statement was, I don't know, six. John Strong got us a deal. Let's say it was,
go.
I don't
Shout
know.
Shout out, Strawny.
700, I had to put like a minus 160, just 540s all you owe there.
There's
a $1.60 worth of bubbly.
Honest
and
JD.
By the way, when my wife and your mom get together.
Yeah, watch out.
Your mom loves the grape juice and my wife loves the bubbles.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, they're the.
Well, they're women who know what they want.
Yes, a lot of grapes.
Yes, a lot of grapes. A lot of grapes, absolutely. This is something you talk about on the air quite a bit. And you've alluded to it as we've starting off this interview, but discuss the importance of keeping perspective amidst this remarkable run by Georgia football.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always been a historian. I love history, and I think just to think about where you've come from is so important. And you know, again, for me, I just look at, you think about the programs when I was growing up, and you know, when you guys were young, y'all were getting kind of the second wave of Nebraska. You know, at the end there with Frazier and Lawrence Phillips and yes, that era there. And, you know, and I remember what they were doing, like with Turner Gill, Irving Fryer, Mike Rozier, Johnny Rogers a little before my time. So, again, I'm thinking about Tom Osborne, you know, Barry Switzer with the Wishbone and all those great teams there. Then, of course, what USC did kind of in the end with John McKay and then John Robinson, and then when Pete Carroll brought it back up, you know, Miami and their great runs, Florida with Spurrier and Meyer, and then, of course, Alabama with Saban. And then to think we're doing things that those schools have done. I think Kirby's career lines up very similar to Steve Spurrier's. And now he's topped it with the back-to-back national titles. But Spurrier was so close, won it all in his seventh year. And a very similar there with Kirby, and the fact too that they're back home. You know, Bear Bryant went to Alabama, Spurrier went to Florida. Now we're in better shape with Kirby. He doesn't have an eye for the NFL, and that was always a thing with Spurrier. You always felt, and that's how pathetic we were for a stretch here in the '90s. I'm like, please take the 49ers job, because I didn't think there was a chance we could beat him.
Yeah.
You know, as long as he was there, then Coach Donning came in and we did. But yeah, keeping the historical perspective, and I just think about when we've had the hard times. I go back to that. You were on that team, that 2010 loss to Colorado. Oh. I mean, that's embarrassing. The loss to Central Florida when we go 96 yards and kick a field goal.
I'll be in group text there, like with Ryan or like with you, and I'm watching the greatness of George right now, and I go, damn, we sucked back in 2010. It was bad football.
Hey, we've got a Ray Guy Award winner. And those guys do not come from national championship teams.
That is a fact.
So I think that is very important. I always said in 1980, the year before we won it all, Georgia lost to Virginia 31-0 the week before Florida. And I always said to Georgia fans back then, if somebody would have told you walking out of that stadium, you're going to win the national title, well, you got to be bleeping crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So you do. I think about thinking about the difficult times and how important that is, because I also feel like that unifies the fan bases. Mm-hmm. The losses bring you together. You know who's hurting, and bandwagoners be gone.
Yeah.
Now, and obviously, when you're winning, Coach McGill used to always say, everybody loves a winner. But when you're winning, everybody wants to jump on board. And obviously, everybody is now, which is great. But for the diehards, we all know, like us in this room, we all know the people. I mean, the tears that were shed that night in Indianapolis, those tears of joy, just how much that meant to so many people. So I think that's where just the historical perspective to think about what we've accomplished, the company that we're in, mm-hmm. with these schools. Again, Alabama, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Southern Cal, this is blue blood that has done this. And then to think about where we were for those dark times and now where we are, king of the mountain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. It's crazy to me that it has taken so long for Georgia to finally arrive. You know, we talk about dark times. I always think about like the SEC program that seems to have kind of like a proud tradition, but just seems hopeless in terms of national success, is Ole Miss. It doesn't seem like they're ever going to get there. But with Georgia, it felt like that for so long that we weren't. And Georgia's a bigger school, a much bigger athletic department. It had so much potential for so long.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's just now realizing that is just, it makes me so mad.
The other part of that, too, though, is that we were so close. I mean, we were, if you take college and pro, I always say we were kind of like the Boston Red Sox here in their drought, so close so many times. It was almost a mathematical improbability. And then you throw in the number of national titles from bordering states. I mean, just think, you know, in the last 20-something years, the number of titles won by Miami, Florida, Florida State, Alabama, Auburn, Clemson.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable.
It really
you throw
is.
At LSU, beat another SEC school. So my friend Mark Partman made a good point, kind of when we were so close, kind of in that 02 to 07 and then the heartbreak of 2012. It's like it would be one thing if it was in, say, the 60s and 70s when, let's just say, like if over an eight-year period, if Michigan, Ohio State, Southern Cal, Oklahoma, Texas, it's like, well, Auburn's doing it, Clemson's doing it, LSU's doing it. If they can do it, we can do
Absolutely.
It. Why not us?
Yeah.
So that was always kind of a dare to be great, and why not us? And then the great thing about Kirby, amongst his many great things, is we have a head coach who has the same dreams as our fans.
Yeah.
And that is to have the Georgia football program be the very best in the country. I've always believed we've had the potential to do it, and now we are.
No doubt.
So enjoy every second.
Yeah, it's special times. There's no doubt about it.
Without a doubt. You think about Georgia, let's say 12 years ago, 15 years ago, and where it is today. And I'm not just talking about the football program, although I do think the football program is maybe a symptom of this, just how much more unified the school and its fans are. You know,
sure.
I mean, just 12 years ago, there were two different foundations supporting the school, and one would not talk to the other. You know, there was so much division between the president and the athletic director, and so many alumni feeling isolated or shunned. And, you know, you fast forward to today, those days are over. We have a president that went to Georgia. Our foundation's over $1 billion, which would never have been thought of before. It's closer to $2 billion than $1 billion. We have a governor who is a Georgia Bulldog.
Yeah.
And
die-hard dog.
Right.
Yeah, Marty was a cheerleader, our first lady. Mary Beth played basketball for Georgia. I mean, it's ingrained.
It's Camelot almost for
yes.
Bulldogs. It's a really cool time. Maybe expanding on that a little bit, when it came time for the governor to do his victory lap with his inauguration, you were the master of ceremonies. Tell us about that experience.
That was an incredible honor, and the one that I was not expecting. And it was pretty amazing, and it was pretty nerve wracking. What you're thinking right there? I also had the honor of emceeing Coach Dooley's celebration of life, and I said, "Well, what Coach Dooley would have said to me is, Jeff, this is a great opportunity. Don't mess it up." And I was thinking the same thing at the inauguration. It really was a wonderful, wonderful day. And it was a great honor for me. It was just incredible. So it was an action-packed week to win the national championship on Monday night, inauguration on Thursday. It was, I think for everybody, it was we were all ready certainly to have a cocktail on Thursday night, that's for sure.
No question. Well-deserved honor for you as well. You mentioned Coach McGill earlier, and that's a name that keeps coming up as we're doing these interviews. Tell our audience, first off, who Coach McGill is. I think it's important to kind of cement who he is and also the impact that he's had on you.
He's the greatest Bulldog ever, hands down. I know at one point, this was in the 90s, he did the job at – good gosh, Claude Felton and I figured out that I think we had 40 full-time employees doing then. But Coach McGill, along with being at the time the winningest coach in college tennis history, Manny actually passed him, his protege,
yeah,
was the sports information director. He was the executive director of the Georgia Bulldog Club. And during the dark times in the 50s, I mean, that's when we had the drought, lost 8 games in a row to Tech, lost 8 out of 9 to Florida. I mean, between the 48 and 59 SEC championships, it was a horrible, horrible time. I mean, there was one year, I think it was 53-54. We went 3-8 in football and 3-22 in basketball. Oh. Coach McGill held it together, and he went town by town, county by county, and got all the alumni in the states and formed these Bulldog clubs. And it was just such a beloved character, the most talented man I ever met. You know, when it came to coaching, when it came to writing, when it came to speech giving, and he had this, I don't want to say inimitable because everybody imitates it, but he was just this wonderful man with a great big heart who meant so much to so many people. And he's definitely there on the Mount Rushmore of the Georgia Bulldogs. And that's another thing that makes Georgia so unique. When I think about some of the great people at Georgia that never, say, played football or coached football here, I think we've got Dan McGill, Larry Munson, Claude Felton, Sonny Seiler, Jack Davis, the famous cartoonist. I hate doing these lists because I'm going to leave somebody out and be embarrassed. But to have just so many people like that who have meant so much. And here's the other big thing you need to know about Coach McGill. I mean, his proteges are Manuel Diaz and Claude Felton.
Yeah.
You talk about setting the table twice, but he was an amazing, amazing man. He and Dan Jenkins, two best writers I ever read, and he is definitely the funniest man I ever met, and he was a world champion cusser as well.
He was
absolutely the greatest. But, when he passed away, and then when Munson passed away, you know, those were really, really tough. And unfortunately, you know, we lost Coach Dooley and Coach Copas and Steve Greer. And again, I'm going to be embarrassed to leave somebody out, but Bulldog Heaven has been rocking and rolling these last couple of years.
Yeah, they've got a lot to celebrate up there
as
well.
Got that right.
They're having a damn good time. There's no question about that. Yeah, I mean, just really a lot of fun talking to you, JD. Let's bring it back to football a little bit. So much is going on in the football world. You know, is the SEC going to expand further? Texas and Oklahoma are on the way. What's going to happen with the Big Ten? What are your thoughts on the future of the SEC? It seems like there's no longer going to be divisions. Do you think the Power Five is going to break away from the NCAA? There's just a lot to discuss in the terms of the future of college football.
Let's anoint JD SEC commissioner for this room. Tell us what decisions you're making.
I needed to throw one other thing on Coach McGill, too. He's also in the Guinness Book of World Records twice. He played the longest ping pong point in history.
Come on.
Yes.
I could hear
and
him talking about
it's like
about
over
that.
Over an hour and a half, one point.
One point.
Did he win
told
it?
The story. I think they forgot, but he was like 12 years old, and as he told the story, I don't remember the name of who he was playing. He said everybody was watching him at the Y, unless you say he was playing skates. He goes, well, what's the score? 9-8 McGill. That a couple of kids went to class, and then they came back to watch it. What's the score? 9-8 McGill. And he was also the world's fastest two-fingered typist, 137 words a minute. That was not hunting and pecking. But I'm going to give you my opinion first. I hate conference expansion. I detest it. part of what makes college football, college sports great. It's tradition, and it's based with regional rivalries, and we're just losing so much of that. And a lot of times it's obviously it's not just about the money, it's about the amount of money.
Yeah, so, for sure.
That's an old joke there, but and it's about, you know, footprints and cable TV boxes, and I understand all that. And, you know, I know it's this just incredible arms race here. I think we are going to lose a lot of traditions, but the powers that be when these decisions are made, kind of for those on the front lines, it's like, all right, here's what the deal is now. Now the devil's in the details. And that might be an understatement, but to try and figure out scheduling and divisional formats. I mean, I never liked the SEC title game. I think it hurts you more than it helps you.
Especially now.
Yeah, I mean, had there not been an SEC title game in 18, 19, 21, you know, you're getting two teams in. And now if you lose that game with the expanded playoff, it's really hurting you.
Yeah.
I mean, you could really be in a spot where you say, well, if you win it, you get the bye. Yeah. I mean, but would you'd have been much better off being in Alabama or Tennessee's shoes than USC's shoes under the new format. So, you know, you're going to get into a spot at Georgia, Florida, doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean,
it could happen. I mean, because think about it, Drew, you play in the NFL. I mean, their games, let's say if the Steelers and Ravens are both in.
Who's playing? I don't want to play this week.
Again,
take a little
rest.
Well,
you could get a bye this week, but you're still in.
Of course.
You're still in.
Yeah.
And we've all seen in sports plenty of wild cards, plenty of teams go through the road. But back to the original thought, and for those who do like it and like all this, I have no vote, so you could just sure. call me an old dinosaur. The original deal I had heard was that it was going to be a pods-type system, and I think our pod was going to be Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and Kentucky.
Correct.
And you'd play them every year. Then basically you would play six, and then the next year play the other six, and then you'd flip-flop it. So over a four-year period, you would have played everybody in the league twice, and you would have been at every stadium.
Yeah.
And it seems just kind of getting the lay of the land, and I'm talking with Josh Brooks, our AD, who does a great job, a couple times, that and you guys are, you know, you kind of get the wave of it, and I'm sure their Twitter analytics. It seems like, for fan bases, for everybody, the push seems to be to have a greater frequency of opponents played. Like, Georgia hasn't been to Texas A&M yet. Now, we were scheduled to go in 24. I don't know how that's going to work out now. So I think that's one of those deals. But there's so many other sports in it. And I think one thing that is important is when you look at the schedule, because I can tell you, like, flying to a place like Texas A&M for a basketball game midweek, that's tough.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, and Drew, you were a student athlete. You know, they talk about this. I think it would be important for, say, the east side of the league, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and now the west and northwest, for the sports where, let's say, Florida's playing Missouri, South Carolina's playing Texas, let's have those on the weekends.
For sure.
And not on a Tuesday, Wednesday,
alleviate
or Thursday
that pressure
night.
For the student-athletes, for
that's,
sure.
That's some tough travel there. But I was talking about with Coach Strickland, our baseball coach. I'm like, well, are we going to play five and then play another five, then another five after that? Are you going to rotate everybody around? And the answer right now is they don't know.
Yeah,
nobody knows. But I would think we've got to have that figured out by this summer, because this
2024 is not far away.
No, it's not. It'll be here before you know it. So that 2024-2025 sports calendar is going to be here. And I get it. Football drives everything, and it is the most important thing. But in terms of scheduling and putting things together for all the other sports, you know, are some sports going to have divisions? Yeah, I don't know. But it looks to me like we're not going to have divisions. But then, all right, let's say you get – you know, Georgia, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee in an SEC title game. It's just
– I know.
It doesn't mean anything. And, you can get a bye. Okay.
I totally agree.
But in the end, not playing in it, if you win, you're playing the same amount of games.
I would advocate strongly. I would love – it won't happen. But I would love to see a team that's in, if they win or lose, just forfeit the game.
We're not going to Atlanta.
Go.
Not going to. And the thing, too, guys, and I didn't hate the plus one model we have now, But I was against it because I knew what was coming. The first rule of any playoff is they always expand.
Of course.
But in the history of sport, can you guys name a playoff that ever tripled in size?
Yeah. Couldn't
From
agree
four
more.
To 12? To 12?
Well, I mean, the tail's wagging the dog at this point. There's too many people who can make too much money off of the properties, the games themselves, who aren't involved with all the logistics.
Well,
there's too many ads to be sold. There's too many. I mean, it's going to continue to get bigger, and it's a shame to see that it's kind of gotten out of containment, well, I think.
I agree with that.
Yes, and the dirty secret, too, is because you think about this. Now, we are fortunate as Georgia fans that the semifinal game was in Atlanta this year. But if it's been in years, like let's say, and I was talking to some friends of mine from Clemson, and I can't remember, but let's say it was a year they played a semifinal game in Tempe, and if the national title game's in California,
yeah,
or if you got to go to Miami or to Arizona, or so, that's hard to get fan bases traveling like that. Well, now you're talking about 2 to 3 more layers of that, but here's the dirty secret. That's more eyeballs on TV.
They don't care.
And
exactly.
The other thing, too, now you're talking about getting into a second semester. Football's always tried to avoid that for various reasons.
Indeed.
Various reasons.
Eligibility being numero uno.
Correct. So now I believe the first year of the play, like the title game is going to be on January 25th. I mean, that is deep. When you're talking about starting practice back in August,
season.
It's an extra month. You're trying to keep that winning edge. And I can just tell you, too, basketball, there's been a slow creep of the schedule. It basically used to start around Thanksgiving, and now it's early November. And I've talked with coaches, players trying to keep that winning edge for another month. You know, you're probably going to have more players like what happened at Ohio State, maybe opting out to get ready. You're creeping into the draft. More is not always better. And as somebody who loves college football, part of what makes it great, it takes forever to get here and it flies by, but it leaves you wanting for more. And that's a long way to go. And I think another thing that's important is I don't think the national title game will ever rival the Super Bowl, because college football is at its best when it's a volume sport. And let's talk about, you know, for us, let's say if it's a day, let's say Georgia's playing. Hey, we won the noon game. All right, we got to get home. Auburn's playing Tennessee. Alabama's playing LSU. Yeah. Michigan's playing Penn State tonight. Hey, then West Coast, we got USC and Washington. That's when you really love it. Or if the dogs are off, like the week before.
Yeah,
all right, what do we got today?
Absolutely.
And you pick out the 6 or 7 games you're watching. And again, going back to historical perspectives, that's where New Year's Day was always so big, because there used to only be one game a week on. Well, New Year's Day, you had those 4 and then 5 games. That was a day you had 4/5 games on in one day. It was unprecedented. It's a volume sport, and it's more regionally based. So I just think to anticipate you could ever have that title game rivaling a Super Bowl, it'll never end. Well, just think about the NCAA tournament. Do you like the first weekend better or
the
last
weekend?
It's
everything. Absolutely,
And, I mean, the title game's kind of an afterthought. I mean, the semifinal Saturday's great.
Yeah.
But it's the first weekend because it's volume. You got, 16 games Thursday, 16 games Friday.
It's awesome.
It's the volume of college athletics.
Yeah. No doubt. Great perspective, JD. Yeah. I absolutely love it. Outside of Georgia, what's been your most memorable experience in your broadcasting career? Caught a lot of big events.
A lot of big events. I got to cover 3 Olympics. That was pretty neat. I got to see Michael Phelps set some records. That was pretty cool. I covered the hockey in Sochi and did basketball in 2016 down in Brazil. It was pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So Sochi, Brazil.
And London.
And London. Okay.
Now, I wasn't doing play-by-play. I was just doing interviews then. But, so that would be it. 99.9% of my broadcasts have been Georgia stuff. I know for me, I'll give you one off the radar. The biggest non-Georgia thing, if I could ever have, you know, like I think about, God, if we could have won in 17, if we could have beat Pitt and Penn State, was my biggest non-Georgia heartbreak ever, though, was Watson at the 2009 British Open.
That
would have meant the it was that was when I just thought that. Can we say an effing tech guy on this part?
But absolutely,
that was one. That was one where I really thought my life was the tree, which I'm like, why are you cursing me like this? Because we had blown a 16-point lead to Tech here in 08, and that would have been 8 straight, which would have equaled the drought of the 50s. And
so then Larry Munson day.
For him, of course, for him to have come so close,
You've done a lot of great things, met a lot of cool people. What celebrity would make you starstruck if you met him or her?
Most of them are dead.
Who would it be?
Don't act like you would be starstruck by Margot Robbie if she came in here right now.
I will tell you this. I got to meet Jack Nicklaus, and I was blown away. And if I ever got to meet Tom Watson, I would be as well. I never got to meet Palmer, but I got to meet the Golden Bear, courtesy of Bill O'Leary and Nan O'Leary, and who were down. Their daughter, Kelly, went to school at Georgia in the footsteps of her parents. So I got to meet the Golden Bear. That was pretty knee-knocking right there.
That is awesome.
Because I would have my friend George Pazekny, who played tennis here in the early 80s. He and Bill are good friends, and Jack would hit tennis with him some, and they would text me. They were with him. And go, ooh, ask him his best one iron. Go, like, all right, was it the U.S. Open at Oakmont? Was it St. Andrews in 70, or was it Augusta, Pebble Beach in 72, the one that hit the stick on 17? They go, we're not asking him that. And they said, we're not going to let you meet him because you just pepper him with these questions. But I was pretty much more like the great Chris Farley when he interviewed Paul McCartney.
Exactly. Do you remember that? That was awesome.
Do you remember when you were in the Beatles? Yes. Man, that was awesome.
That's such a great.
Do you remember when you won the Masters?
Yeah.
Man, that was awesome. So yeah, but meeting Jack Nicklaus was pretty darn. And one of the Olympics, I got to meet Marv Albert.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was, okay. And I blew it at Sochi too. I really blew it because I was walking by, and Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth were walking by. And I love Al Michaels and Marv, are my favorite TV guys. And Michaels did the TV call for the Blue to Scott game.
There you go. That was just brought up.
It's a tremendous call. Of course, Collinsworth was on. And I thought to myself, I need to walk up to them and go.
Was Collinsworth on the Florida team that year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I almost walked up to them and said, just to let you know, you two guys were both present for maybe the most memorable event of my life.
The birth of your child. He's like, no, 1980 Georgia, Florida.
I didn't do it. November the 8th, 1980. I didn't do it, but I saw them walking together, and I go, do it. And I tell my buddy Mark Parkman, who's a big Georgia, he goes, you should have done it. It would have been tremendous. But I chickened out.
I love broadcasters, and obviously some of my close friends are great broadcasters, like Jeff Dantzler. My first game ever in the NFL, Sunday Night Football, Steelers at Broncos. It was Peyton Manning's first game as a Denver Bronco.
Wow.
So NBC Sunday Night Football, I'm a rookie punter. I'm out there way before anybody else, and I'm around the 50-yard line, and guess who walks up to me? Al Michaels.
That's awesome.
And he introduces himself, talks about dad, congratulations, followed your – I was like – this is pretty cool.
He knows who I am.
Yeah. Did he make fun of you for just total nepotism in the NFL?
He probably thought that. Yeah. But no, he didn't say that.
I'm going to go say it to Kevin Butler's kid.
So because he was calling, the thing that people don't really realize, because that was your dad who made the kick when the guy jumped out of the stands through the portal football, to make the catch, which I never will forget.
Yeah.
That might be the Monday night moment of all time.
So the guys from Barstool Chicago did a quick documentary on that guy. I forget his name. Dad would know his name. But they reached out to me, and they were like, hey, we're doing a documentary. Can we get your dad's information? We want to interview him about the guy who jumped out of the stadium. I don't know if you've seen this video, Ryan. Liam can cut it up and find it. It's on YouTube. But dad kicks an extra point at Soldier Field against the Packers on Monday Night Football.
The
it goes
sitting,
over the net.
He's sitting next to the
concourse.
Where you walk out.
And he just jumps off his seat and catches the ball in midair, falls. I mean, it's an all-time scene.
He probably had to go down with 12 feet.
Yeah, I mean, there's
least.
No question about it.
I mean, it'd be like jumping off the roof of a one-story house to make the catch.
Absolutely.
And he caught it, too. Some of the timing of it. It was unbelievable.
Oh, dude, this interview is fantastic.
He was what Steve Bartman wanted to be.
And then Lynn Swann interviews him during the game. And he's like, my name's Al something. I played football all my life. Like, it's the funniest thing ever.
A real football guy.
All-time
bucket list is to tag along on a boys' trip with you and your dad to Chicago.
It's all time.
Bask in the secondary light of Kevin Butler.
That's what I do.
Your dad's one of those few guys, though, that is such a college legend and such a pro legend, and to be revered. I mean, you're talking about fan bases, the University of Georgia Bulldogs, and then the Chicago Bears, and to be a part of that 85 team, which is beyond royalty there. But to be so beloved by two such passionate fan bases, there are not many athletes who could say that. I mean, I know Peyton wound up going to the Broncos. You might say, well, Peyton Manning with Tennessee and then with the Colts. I mean, there are some extreme examples, but there are not that many who won as much as your dad did at both places, too.
It's really cool, that 85 Bears team. I mean, I've never been around the Cubs that brought a World Series to Chicago, but that 85 Bears team, they are revered in every sense of the word up in Chicago. It's awesome. All right, J.D., Ryan said it. It's the truth. You're the voice of Athens, Georgia.
Oh, come on.
It's true.
What would be on the to-do list for a perfect day in Athens, Georgia?
Oh, for a perfect day for anyone? Or?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm you know,
for
right,
Jeff Dantzler.
For Jeff Dantzler.
We know what
well,
anybody
we got to win,
do.
But I've got I'm trying to enjoy the games more because there's a lot of time. Then we finally won it because sometimes, you know, the games are so stressful. Like, did you really enjoy that?
Like, if they win, I do.
Yeah, but I'm I enjoyed the end of the Georgia-Alabama game. I didn't enjoy the first half of it.
I mean, you are a nervous wreck when you watch football games. Have you been around this guy during a football game?
It's
I mean, he will give you anxiety.
When he was working the press box, I'd hear him. You know, and I would and I said this earlier. It was like the voice of God. Something would happen, or it sounded like he made it happen. You know, Drew Butler's kick is blocked out of bounds or something, and then you would hear the PA guy say it. Then you would hear the CBS guy say it. Then you would hear our guy say it. Then the Kentucky guy said it or whatever. You remember that losing to Kentucky on senior night?
Oh, I do. On 2009. Yeah, Randall Cobb.
We shouldn't do
Andre
that.
Woodson.
We shouldn't have that senior night before games. No, I just think, you know, it's just like any of us. I think just being with your friends and having your first cocktail in the morning.
Yeah, of
because
course.
You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
That's a fact.
And just, you know, whether it's playing golf, whether it's watching the dogs. Because this time, I mean, Georgia football is the greatest thing in the world. But this time of year, we've got 13 different sports going. And it's awesome. I mean, when you got, say, basketball, gymnastics here, we got a baseball and tennis weekend going on. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of stuff for Georgia fans to do. You know, just find your favorite spot, sit on the deck somewhere. Athens, Georgia is hard to beat.
You can do that in the spring, too. You can go out to dinner after going to a sports event, and you're going to see people you know, and it's not going to be a total madhouse, which is awesome.
You know, when you're talking about historical perspectives, I think that's another thing, too, is that it's like college football, it brings people back together. And we all think back to when we were young. I know it was different with you because you were playing. Then you get older, you get married, you start having kids. People you used to see all the time, it dwindles. And now they're probably, for a lot of us, people you see 5, 6, 7 times a year, it's those weekends in the fall.
Yeah.
Well, and to speak to our, you know, what we were talking about earlier with maybe the quality of the games going down as conferences expand, you know, I've already felt that. And, you know, I feel like I live a million miles away. We live on St. Simon's. And just being able to come back for a game and be amongst everybody and be able to turn on the radio and hear JD or run into such and such who you hadn't seen or such and such who gained a ton of weight, whatever. It's good for the soul. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I agree.
For me at this point, you know, so I mean, now that we've won, I feel like I can accept that.
Yes. You can. I mean, I know for me, it's back when you can smoke in the stadium, which I actually liked. I was a kid. I wasn't smoking. But there was this wonderful smell, this aroma of cigarette smoke, peanut shells, and bourbon mixed with Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot duplicate it. I mean, and I just – when I'm a kid, I just
– Sounds like Liam's apartment.
So there's – so but with that, I just that might smell a little different, but I know I always liked walking to the stadium. I would go like through Clark Howell, and you've got this little shaded area, and then go up those stairs on the side. And I love doing that. The first game I went to, BYU 82, my first game at Sanford Stadium when your dad kicked the game winner.
Who was the quarterback?
And it's Steve Young threw six picks. Yep.
Six interceptions.
17-14.
Is that Stinger who was the quarterback?
John was quarterback. Yep. And, you know, so that's like, to me, you know, they say that sights and smells and tastes can bring back the memories. There's still times kind of walking around the stadium, going back through that parking lot or spots on North Campus, coming down where you can kind of close your eyes and it feels like it was the 80s or whenever you were growing up. That's what's special to me. So here's to peanut shells, cigarette smoke, and bourbon.
Yeah, amen to that.
Yeah, amen.
Put that on a T-shirt.
There you go.
What was your first game at UGA?
My first game at UGA that I remember, Dad, when he was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. I want to say it was a Saturday night at home against Ole Miss, and I think Georgia lost. Goal line stand. Is that right? 96. Do you remember?
96,
no,
yeah.
That would have been 2001.
What?
2001.
We beat Dad him. Got we beat him 0-1 out there. No, 0-1, we lost to Auburn.
That was the game. At the goal line?
Coach Rick thought
night
we had
game?
A timeout left.
Was it a
night
game?
We handed off to Jasper Sainz.
That was
yeah.
it. Yep, that was it. That's the game that I remember probably the most. Because I moved here in 99.
Oh, I didn't even think
Yeah, I moved here in 99.
California for
we were in California for 8 months. We were in Chicago before then.
Yeah.
So the first Georgia game I ever went to was the 81 Clemson game. We lost 13-3. With 9 turnovers to the eventual national champions on the road. That tells you how good that team was.
Wow.
We lost by 10 to the national champions with 9 turnovers. So that was my first
nine
ever game
turnovers.
In person.
What I is up with you? 6 picks, 9 turnovers? We got to keep you out of that stadium.
Well, no doubt. And then, because the thing, I didn't get to go to Georgia, Florida in 80 because my parents said that was that's a grown-up's trip. So I'm sure a lot of us heard that growing up. Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned enjoying a day in Athens with your wife or loved one. My last question before we get to our parting segment that's called Five to Go. Literally, I have this question written down. How in the hell did a guy like you marry your wife, Emily? Shout out to Emily Dantzler.
I'm very charming.
You are. I'll give you that.
Very
you are charming.
And I'm a smooth talker. Smooth
I'll
talker.
I'll co-sign that
And I
as
caught
well.
Her in a moment of weakness.
There you go.
And then
Champagne.
Capitalized.
You said, honey, run this tab
like,
up.
It's like if there's a fumble, don't just fall on it. Scoop it up and take it to the end zone, baby.
God bless you, brother.
Situational football.
That is awesome. That is awesome. JD, this has been an absolute blast.
It's awesome, man. Anytime. It's my honor.
Our last segment's called Five to Go. We're going to ask you 5 questions to get to know you a little bit better.
Okay.
And you've done a great job. I'll give you a B-plus right now.
Okay.
But you have the
B-plus.
Opportunity to get up to an A.
Okay.
All right, so here it is.
All right.
Go ahead, Ryan. Start us off. 5 to go.
All right. What team do you want to see us schedule the most in football?
In football. We're talking like a non-conference?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we get one game in Sanford Stadium. You're scheduling. You can get schedule whoever you want.
I always wanted to do a home-and-home with Michigan. I mean, since we beat them in the Orange Bowl, too, I think it'd be cool to go to the Big House and have them come here. An addendum to that, it's been a dream of mine, too, to beat Penn State for the national title.
Get a little revenge, exact some revenge. I like that.
I saw Todd Blackledge after we won in Indianapolis,
yeah.
And I just go, Todd, my name's Jeff Dantzler. I was in the stadium. I was 10 years old on 1-1-83, and he goes, well, I hope this makes it better. And I just go, never.
And if you're not watching this on YouTube, Jeff is being very
that
serious
was,
right now.
That was a hard night.
And taste of the town sucks.
Why don't you show us a football game?
That's amazing. What's your biggest guilty pleasure?
Oh, boy. There's a lot of food I like. Probably fried food. Fried chicken, fried shrimp,
okay.
French fries.
Yeah.
Hilltop Grill,
bacon wrapped
shrimp.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a grind in the fall.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one thing, you'll traveling with teams, especially with baseball, when you're eating like they're eating, but they're playing and you're not,
yeah.
I have
Catch
to work out
to
on the road every day. And, baby, that's just to maintain. Just to maintain. But I would say fried food would probably be my number one guilty pleasure.
All right, you can see one band / musical act. Why, this was typed terribly,
oh,
Drew.
I'm sorry.
One band. You can see one band. They're playing in your backyard. Who's playing?
Led Zeppelin 1, Beatles 2.
Okay.
Like
did you watch Get Back? Have you seen that?
Is that the movie where the Beatles never existed?
No, that's Yesterday.
It's okay.
That's pretty good. That's like the perfect thing just to have on.
Like, what a thing to steal there.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's good. You'll watch. It's
okay.
A British movie. But Get Back is, it can be painfully boring at times. It's on Apple TV, but it's just about these guys being brought together by some producer, you know, gets the Beatles back together. They all hate each other, and they have to put this Get Back show together. And just, you know, George Harrison quits. Well, you got to watch it.
I love
great.
The greatest American band ever is from Athens, Georgia, R.E.M. I love R.E.M. too. Solo artists. Probably,
that's a great music festival right there.
Yeah,
Zeppelin, the Beatles, and R.E.M.
Probably Billy Joel, Bowie, George Strait, and then
The
great one. I love Frank Sinatra, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Larry Munson once played piano at a Sinatra concert.
No.
He told me that story once.
No way.
And I wrote an article that I said, if there was one show, I could have. I mean, Larry Munson and Frank, he said, I wore white socks. He went and bought me some black socks and made me wear them.
Where was he?
I can't remember. It was probably somewhere outside of Minneapolis.
I want to hear. I wish I could hear in that gravel voice the summer wind. I can't do it, but man.
Unbelievable. You got another one? You want me to go?
You go. All right. I'm trying to find.
What's your dream golf foursome?
With actual golfers?
No, anybody. Who do you want to play with?
Living or dead?
Yeah, of course. It's just five to go.
Teddy Roosevelt, Benjamin Franklin, and Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, my God. I mean, I love it. Where are we playing?
I might finish second.
That's right. That's right. You're trying to stack the field.
That's right. I think the Renaissance men would be at the top of my list. But if I had to go with players, Watson, Nicholas, and Palmer.
Come on,
that would be.
That's awesome.
That picture your dad has of Palmer and Hogan smoking a cigarette I think that's on the 13th tee when Arnie was in his prime and Hogan was at the end. That's a pretty damn cool picture.
Absolutely.
That's a great one.
Absolutely.
All right, best SEC road trip.
Oxford.
Okay. Walk me through it. I'm embarrassed to say I've never done
Oxford. Oh, Oxford's fun, yeah. I mean, it's the square.
Yeah, well, everybody talks about it.
When I was younger, too, especially, I mean, I've always said for quality, Athens has probably got the raw numbers, but Oxford, the per capita. I mean, I just remember the first time I went when I was in college, I was blown away by how beautiful the girls were. It was unbelievable. I mean, it is, they like to have a good time. The cocktails are flowing. I love going in. I don't count Nashville as a college town.
Yeah.
It is a great college town, but I love going to Nashville when we play Vandy for the various sports. And then Baton Rouge for the food. I would weigh 400 pounds if I lived in Baton Rouge. Eating Cajun food.
There's,
oh, my gosh.
That version of you exists there. I saw it last fall. Yeah. There's multiple of them.
Speaking of food, this is your last question in five to go. It's your last meal. What restaurant are you dining at?
Let's see. In Athens, it'd probably have to be Hilltop or Marker 7. On St. Simon's. I'm going Frederica House.
Frederica House. That's a
fried
deep cut.
Yes, a fried seafood. Probably do a little shrimp and scallops.
If you go to Frederica House, it has true Pecky cypress all around.
That's a wood
and,
there.
It has these little pecks in it. If you go to Sea Island, they have artificial Pecky cypress where somebody went in with like a pocket knife and made this it look the like stuff. The real thing. But Frederica House has the real deal.
And they give you 4-finger dark liquor drink pours, too. Yeah, they're not messing around.
I like that. Sets the stage just right. Well, JD, this has been an absolute pleasure, my man. Thank you so much for joining Punt and the Poor Man. It would not be the right thing to do without kicking it off like a guy with a guy like yourself. And I'll tell you this. You definitely got an A. Maybe even an A+. Yeah.
Yes.
I'll give you that for sure.
No nepotism either.
No,
was given. That's
not
right.
Not at all. Absolutely.
It was all smooth sailing once he figured out where the journalism building was.
Yes,
I mean, the guy
never
knows how many interceptions
in
Steve Young threw between the hedges in 83. But
82,
where's the journalism building?
Absolutely.
No clue.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jeff. Really appreciate
this.
We'll be
back
next week with another episode of Punt and the Poor Man. See ya. Nobody loves Georgia like Jeff Dantzler does.
Gosh.
He's the best. I honestly love JD. He is the best. There's no doubt about it.
And you know, how about Emily? How about how he talked about picking up Emily?
No, of course. To know Jeff is to know Emily, and they are both fantastic people. And how Emily is, you know, the stalwart of the family through the ups and downs. Like in that Ohio State game, as he was talking about. Obviously, he was in the stadium. I'm assuming Emily was somewhere near him. I mean, her rule must just be can't look at him, can't talk to him. Because I was anxious in that game, too. And I try to, you know, remain somewhat even-keeled through Georgia football games. But that was a great conversation. Jeff is a true savant. Steve Young, 6 picks, 1982. Oh. Like, I don't know how he does it.
No clue where the journalism building was. No clue.
Oh, how great was that?
Doesn't know where anything is, but knows everything about everything that's ever happened here.
Yeah, so much fun. I was honored that Jeff came and joined us. Obviously, you've known Jeff for a number of years, and he'll be around these parts for a very, very long time. There was a reason we got him. I think it lived up to the hype. JD, thanks so much for tuning in, and thank you for listening as well. We will see you next week on Punt and the Poor Man.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.